Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and a very warm welcome to the eClerx Services Limited Q3 FY 2019 earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode. There will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I'm now glad to hand the conference over to Mr. Rohit Dasgupta, CFO, eClerx Services Limited. Thank you, and over to you, Mr. Gupta.
Good evening, and thank you for joining eClerx earnings call for the third fiscal quarter of FY 2019, ending 31st December. In Q3, we saw a very modest sequential increase in dollar revenue by about 0.3% to $50.2 million, while our YOY dollar revenue increased by 2.7% in Q3. The sequential and YOY growth in constant currency stood at 0.7% and 3.3% respectively. We saw a minor decrease in offshore dollar revenue on YOY basis, although on sequential basis it remained flat. On the other hand, the onshore revenues have shown healthy YOY growth of about 21% this quarter. This Q3 was our fifth consecutive quarter with YOY dollar revenue increase after five prior quarters of continuous YOY declines. Q3 INR operating revenue increased by 6.1% YOY, while it increased by 0.5% QOQ to INR 3,576 million. The margin metrics saw significant adverse movement in Q3 due to several extraneous factors, one-time cost, and onshore investments. The operating margin for Q3 stood at INR 548 million, a decrease of 25% sequentially. Profit after tax in Q3 was at INR 390 million, witnessing a 44% decline since last quarter. Other income for the quarter decreased sharply from INR 193 million in Q2 to a loss of 4 million in Q3 due to INR 218 million decrease in quarter-on-quarter revaluation and realized gains caused by 3 rupees appreciation in last two quarter ending rates. Our forward hedge book of about 146.5 million stands at an average rate of 71.7 rupees to a dollar, a rate that has increased by about 1.20 since last quarter, primarily due to recently booked hedges at higher spot rates. We have hit our lowest hedge realization rate in Q2, and this realization rate will remain at a low of about 69 rupees till Q4 and is likely to consistently increase with each passing quarter of FY 2020. The operating margin percentage decreased by about 500 basis points this quarter, out of which about 260 basis points decline was due to our increased upfront investment on onshore delivery, and the remaining increase was due to SG&A and depreciation. The biggest increase in G&A was due to Pune facility consolidation project, which will see elevated levels of cost due to one-time overlapping rent and OpEx during Q3 and Q4. This quarter's G&A increase also reflects the full-blown impact of our Fayetteville facility expansion completed during last quarter, and also the recruitment cost of onshore consulting employees, both of which are likely to continue in near term. We had increase in depreciation in Q3 due to accelerated depreciation of old Pune facilities, and depreciation is likely to peak around Q1 of FY 2020 when new facility assets go live. We had about 7,219 million INR of cash and cash equivalents at the Q3 end, which increased sharply by INR 688 million since Q2. The net operating cash flow during the quarter was INR 1,051 million, which marks our highest cash conversion ratio in last many years. We have spent around 77 million INR on CapEx in Q3, which is higher than Q2 due to ongoing Pune facility project. Our CapEx will keep increasing over next few quarters with balanced one-time capex on account of Pune project of about INR 300 million coming during next two quarters. We have spent about 17 million INR on various CSR activities during the quarter, and we are tracking well to exhaust our budgeted amount by Q4. ESOP Trust, which began operations way back in 2016, has accumulated about 834,000 shares at an average price of about 1245 rupees till end of calendar year 2018. In line with our stated approach on capital allocation, we have distributed about 55% of our last 12 quarters cumulative PAT as well as cumulative net operating cash flow in form of dividends and buyback. And we will strive to maintain that in medium term. The DSO for the quarter was at 85 days, showing improvement over the last quarter. Most of the revenue concentration and utilization metrics have remained similar to last quarter. In addition to the continued growth in onshore revenue share, managed services growth has shown satisfactory increasing trend this time. One of our newer cable clients has moved from 500,000 to 1,000,000 plus bucket during this quarter. Revenue of top 10 clients has shown further acceleration in YOY growth terms from 0.5% to 2.5% after many quarters of continuous decline. Emerging clients' growth, however, has moderated temporarily to single digit YOY. The company employee strength has increased by 429 YOY to 9,520, however, with a marginal decline of 63 since last quarter. Our onshore staff, mainly in Fiat Ville and consulting, has increased by 67 in line with the actual and expected onshore revenue growth. Our sales and business development staff count has marginally increased from 86 in last quarter to 87 this quarter. The India attrition has increased sequentially to about 43.5%, with most of the increase at execution level due to increasing demand in certain skill areas and increasing offshore business churn. Our effective tax rate for Q3 was slightly above 28%, and we expect our FY19 ETR to be at the lower end of previously guided 28 to 30% range. The demand environment for our services has been showing consistent improvement as our 9 months of new sales has increased by about 20% YOY, while the roll-offs have decreased by about similar percentage in YOY terms. Almost three-fourths of our new deal wins come at the back of past good service and relationships, demonstrating great partnerships between offshore and onshore teams. We are also seeing some early signs of dollar price increases across several clients after a lull of last few years. Our revenue per employee has been rising continuously, mainly due to growing onshore digital consulting practice. Our hybrid delivery model and digital has seen significant success, with revenues tripling in these 9 months on YOY basis. The growth in managed services is very broad-based, showing desired result of that strategic imperative enterprise-wide. On services front, avoidable truck roll and digital analytics were the biggest driver of YOY revenue growth this quarter. In a significant achievement in Q3, we added two new client logos in Fortune 500 league, with one coming from apparel industry and another one from electronics industry. Average deal size won this quarter was at a multi-year high due to one of our largest offshore deals in financial markets from a top US bank and a large creative asset management onshore project for a UK retailer. Both won in competitive RFP situations. Such offshore deal wins can help us grow our offshore revenue mix in more balanced manner in near future. In fact, we are seeing increased RFP activities across the board. Compared to FY18, we have seen twice the number of RFPs in this YTD, showing that our participation rate in the market opportunities have increased due to improved branding and marketing. This quarter also saw our largest ever independent RPA implementation project win from a new Fortune 100 tech client, and this project will start in Q4. Growth in large clients has been very satisfactory this quarter, with 5 of the 7 clients in 5 million plus category growing both on sequential as well as YOY basis, leading to improvement in top 10 client revenue trend. In another success of our investment leading the revenue approach for Fightville, we have increased confidence now to make that site serving multiple clients in FY20. However, on the adverse client-side events, two of our clients in 1 to 5 million revenue category outside of top 10 have undergone change of control, and we have witnessed significant degrowth in them in Q3 as they change their strategic course under the new leadership. This uncontrollable event has hurt both our emerging client as well as firm level growth in Q3, and we expect this impact to diminish within next 2 quarters. Our revenues across the geographies is becoming much more diversified. While we have expanded some of our existing clients into new territories like Hong Kong now, we have also bagged our first client in Scandinavia. At the same time, Switzerland, Canada, and Australia-based client revenues have increased at double-digit CAGR over the last 2 years. To summarize, our increased participation in the market opportunity, slowly decreasing impact of roll-offs, improving hedged and spot currency trajectory, and completion of Pune facility consolidation will help us improve dollar revenues as well as operating margin in the next FY. With this, I hand over the call back for Q&A.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on the touchtone phone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Pankaj Kapoor from JM Financial. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. Can you quantify the impact of these two clients that you spoke of in the $1 to $5 million band? What was the impact of those clients on the revenue for this quarter, and how do you see panning it out in the next couple of quarters?
So, Pankaj, thank you and for the question. The landscape is fast evolving as these events were announced itself during Q3. We have seen early signs of realignment in those clients, and we have already taken some bit of degrowth in Q3, and we expect that Q4 the picture will be relatively much more clear. And as I mentioned, in terms of quantum, these clients, both of these clients, were actually in 1 to 5 million revenue category on LTM basis. So we expect that these clients hopefully will be retained into FY20, but with much lower revenue trajectory.
Got it. And Ritesh, can you give some sense of the order in which you're saying looks to be far better than what we have done in the last few years? So any kind of a quantification or a color if you can give on those?
I missed the initial part. Can you repeat?
On the order booking that you have done, which you mentioned has been one of the better ones in the last few quarters, can you give some quantification of that in terms of how the size would be of the order book?
So I think we have discussed off and on in the previous calls. So typically, if you take 2 or 3 years trajectory, the new sales in any year have been upwards of 50 million. At the same time, we see almost equivalent roll-offs, and that's why the revenue trajectory has not been, in high digits. So this year, obviously in 9 months itself, compared to last 9 months, we have seen 20% increase in those new sales. So I think you can get the quantum because the full year is averaging around 50 million upwards.
Got it. And Roitash, you mentioned the initial hit would be continue to be there from the G&A because of the Pune facility in Q4 as well, maybe partly in 1Q. But at the same time, we are now seeing signs of price increases coming back, which I'm probably hearing after several quarters. Also, there seems to be some moderation on the overall cost pressures as well. So, what kind of outlook can one build in for margins going forward? Do you think the margin should be stable with the headwind, tailwind normalizing each other? Or you think that there's a possibility of an increase, especially given that from Q2 onwards, you're going to see a better realized rates as well?
Pankaj, this quarter was obviously a low trajectory for our operating margin, about 55 crores. And if you exclude the one-offs on account of Pune consolidation project, about 5 crores was due to that. However, that 5 crores will continue into Q4 and will only wane off in Q1. So if you were to, you know, project current financials into Q1, probably you can add 5 crores OPM onto 55 crores just because of that. On top of that, rest of the factors are currency and the offshore revenue growth. If you see this quarter, the offshore revenue of about 38.5 million was almost flat as Q2. So once we start seeing tick up in that, hopefully in early part of next year, then I think that will be a very, very material organic event for uptick into the operating margin trajectory. The other event obviously being the hedge rate, which I think you can model for.
Correct. So in fact, you mentioned three. You mentioned the obviously the hedge rates, which are going to be positive from onwards. Also the pricing increases, which you are seeing. The third is the good quantum of order wins with a high offshore component, which I am presuming will start kicking in from Q1 onwards. So what I'm just trying to figure out is that we have seems to be having some good tailwinds developing for our margins. So is it fair to assume a decent margin expansion next year on a normalized basis?
If all of those events pan out and the currency one being, relatively much certain than the other ones, I would say that we should be up next year compared to the YTD operating margin percentage.
Right. And just lastly, on the on-site investments, are we probably again normalizing over there, or you think that the Fayette Village Center may continue to require some more investments, as well as whatever you're doing on the sales front, that may continue?
So, I was more referring to the consulting as well as Fayette Village resource cost, and that's primarily due to a long gestation or training period required in both the businesses. So for example, in Fayette Village, because we do little relatively complex end work, it requires almost 3+ months of training. And our approach in Fayette Village has, since inception, has been that we will get the resources and infrastructure first, and then we will get the projects and revenue. And this had been working quite well. Just that revenue trails 3 to 6 months compared to the cost. So that's on the Fayette Village side. On the consulting, for example, digital consulting practice, very similar trend with a different nuance, which is that because these opportunities typically are of short-term projects, requiring, onshore scoping and consulting, especially in the analytics and creative area. We require people on the ground to back such opportunities, because we cannot afford to ask for 3 or 4 months for those resources to be available. And this hiring is obviously local in US or UK or elsewhere. So we require some bit of upfront estimation-based hiring to continue to be able to participate in such opportunities.
Got it. Thank you, Rohitash. Thank you and all the best.
Thank you. Before we take the next question, we would like to remind participants that you may press star and one to ask a question. The next question is from the line of Madhu Babu from Centrum Broking. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hi, sir. On the attrition, can you elaborate a bit more on why, the offshore attrition has been so high?
Hi, Madhu. As I mentioned in my prepared remarks, the topmost reason is actually the churn in offshore business. So as I was referring to Pankaj's question, our offshore revenue has remained flat quarter on quarter, if you just take that horizon for a moment. However, under the hood, lot of new things have come and lot of old things have gone away, right? So there is a change in business and some bit of churn. And the additions and drop-offs not necessarily match in terms of skill areas or, you know, locations or things like that, right? So that churn, continuous churn, is causing attrition to be at elevated level. And secondly, I think in certain skill pockets, there is a good demand still in external market, which I think is also a contributor.
Okay. And second, on the on-site delivery, 520 employees. So how do we see that headcount moving in the next 1.5-2 years in terms of the headcount and hiring there?
So Madhu, we don't prepare, you know, very long-term plans on that. But as I indicated in the previous comment, I think you can anticipate similar trend in future, at least for next 12 months. However, as I mentioned, we also expect revenues to increase at the back of, you know, people or resources that we already got on board very soon.
Okay, sir. Thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Devanshu Bansal from MK Global. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, sir. Thanks for the opportunity. So my question is again on the on-site headcount. So we have seen an increase in on-site headcount by nearly 70 people. So is it in anticipation of increasing pipeline or is it that we have won certain contracts, on-site contracts, which are due for ramp-ups? And so your comments on that.
Hi, this is TD. So just to respond to that, I think if you're referring to headcount onshore for delivery, yes, we've seen relatively strong demand for onshore services. And in most of those areas, we sort of need to hire a little bit ahead of when we expect to deploy those resources, because they, you know, typically some degree of training is also required before those resources can become billable. So you're right, of the increase in headcount, some would be for projects that have already gone live and others would be for engagements that we expect will go live in the forthcoming week.
Okay, right, sir. So can you quantify in terms of improvement in pipeline, in on-site pipeline?
Well, I think we disclose in our quarterly metrics the percentage of revenue that's coming from onshore delivery. And if you look at that number, it's somewhere around 22-23% of revenues currently that comes from onshore. If I look at our outstanding pipeline today, probably the mix of onshore projects is a little higher than that. So, you know, that number may move a little bit north from 23%, but shouldn't change very dramatically in the near future.
Okay. Thank you, sir. That's it from my side.
Thank you. Before we take the next question, we would like to remind participants that you may press star and one to ask a question. The next question is from the line of Vishal Desai from Axis Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for the opportunity. Just a quick...
Vishal, you're not audible.
Sorry, am I better now?
Yes, thank you.
Thanks for the opportunity. Just in terms of the demand environment, while from the commentary that Rohitash gave, it seemed like roll-offs are easing off, and it seems that the overall pipeline as well as deal wins are shaping up well. Could you give us some color in terms of going into the next 6 months, how we are seeing growth pan out? Do we see an acceleration from here? Because typically what we've heard from you guys over the last few quarters has been that visibility beyond probably 2 quarters is difficult to predict. So something from a six-month perspective as to how demand is shaping up would be better in terms of commentary.
Hi, this is PD again. You know, I confess that it's hard for us to give a longer-term outlook on demand because things change very quickly. And again, on the small size of our P&L, single events can have material impact in terms of affecting net growth outcomes. With that said, you know, I think, as Rohitash said, we've seen an increase in gross sales of between 15 and 20% this year compared to prior years, which is a healthy sign for us because it shows what we are pitching is still relevant to clients. And, you know, I think roll-offs have eased a little bit compared to what they were last year. So qualitatively, it seems to us that, you know, net growth outcomes should improve over calendar 2019, but I can't put a number to it because, ourselves, we don't have that degree of visibility.
Sure. And in terms of the verticals, what we typically call out in terms of our segments, which do you think would probably continue to do better or could be under pressure going forward?
Actually, I think we are seeing net growth across the three businesses. Again, on a quarter-on-quarter basis, one business might do better than the other. But on a YOY basis, I think all three businesses have grown compared to last year.
Sure. So fair enough to say that the net new wins, which is up around 20% on a nine-month basis, it's fairly balanced across the three businesses, if I have to infer that from what you're saying. Hello?
Yes, that's fair. That's correct.
Sure. Thanks, guys, and all the best.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Surya Narayanan M. from DSP BlackRock. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, PD and Rohitash. So I just had one question on that same aspect of roll-offs versus deal wins. So if you look at that map of 20% increase in new deals and a similar decrease in roll-offs, one should ideally be looking at a growth of around 10%. Is that a timing issue? And how do you expect that to play out? Because how do you think about this? I think you've explained that, but could you just explain that once again?
I think that you're right. There are two elements to it. There is obviously some degree of timing, but also importantly, I think these numbers, the percentages we are quoting are all with respect to the prior year. And actually in FY18, we saw some degrowth over the course of the year in terms of top line, right? So when you say that we're going to add 10%, that 10% is from a base of whatever it was last year, minus 2-3% in revenue terms, right? So I think there's that angle to it because the base itself showed a degrowth last year. Roll-offs were higher than growth sales. This year, growth sales are definitively higher than roll-offs. So we will show growth, but it won't be in the 10% magnitude.
Got that. And just in terms of your investment plans, be it in terms of onshore headcount, can you give us a sense of how much further this is likely to continue at, just given the current sort of pipeline that you have or the current expected business that you have? At what pace would you have to continue these investments going into the next year?
Hi, Surya. This is Rohitash. So we are in the middle of our budgeting cycle for the next year. But based on the early discussions and plans, I think the further investments from this level will happen in FY20, in certain small packets, if I will. So for example, in Fayetteville, we don't add hundreds of people upfront. We add in certain small size lots, and as they become billable, then we take the bet on the next lot of hiring and training, right? And I think same approach is in the digital consulting also. So while we have plan of adding certain number of people in FY20, which is getting firmed up, I think the hiring will actually happen in small chunks. And as we see the first chunk of resources getting built, we will, start hiring for the second and so on and so forth. So if the plan goes successfully, then it will be a straight line. If the plan, sees some delays, then obviously there will be less investments during the FY20 compared to our plan.
Got that. And just related to that, so since you were speaking about revenues coming from other geographies as well, you mentioned Scandinavia, some deal wins, Hong Kong, certain other places in Europe. So would that mean that you will have to set up your nearshore or onshore delivery centers in those locations as well as the business scales up?
Yeah, so that may be a consideration for FY20. At this time, it is too early because the revenue quantums from some of these geographies that I mentioned are not significant enough to justify for that. Plus, we also expect that some geography has to have, multiple clients
to justify an investment in nearshore or onshore delivery or setting up a subsidiary. So early days, but you are right that if things go well in certain geographies, then in FY20 that might be a consideration. Obviously, we will start very small because it will primarily be led by consulting type of engagements to start with, unlike our Fight Village, which was a US-specific approach.
Got that, Rukitash. Thanks. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Sarvesh Gupta from Maximal Capital. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the opportunity, sir. So, two questions. So, if you see the trajectory of the margins, you know, even if I exclude the one-offs, it looks like a pretty low number. So, can we assume that this is the bottom of what our margin profile will look like in the coming 4 to 6 quarters?
So, Sarvesh, purely from one-off standpoint, as I was mentioning in the previous question, this looks like a bottom. But in that answer, I am not including or excluding any business-related factors or currency. So if you add currency, then obviously it will go up from here, deep into next year. If you remove one-offs, it should go up. So the only relatively uncertain element is how much of offshore growth will happen from here on in absolute terms, and how much of onshore delivery investments that we have made in last 3 to 6 months will get monetized in next 3 to 6 months.
Correct. So given where things stand right now, I mean, what can be the guidance for the margins? So, you know, excluding one off, we are at 17% now. So where can we be in the next 4 to 6 quarters as things stand now? And of course, you know, it is subject to change basis the business dynamics.
Yeah, so difficult to, you know, give a guidance on either percentage or the absolute number. But as I indicated in the previous question, if the on the business side, the offshore growth happens, then I think FY20, even in percentage terms, should be slightly upwards of compared to the YTD of FY19. That is predicated mainly on the currency, which is almost certainty in terms of hedge rates, and the removal of one-offs, and subject to, you know, some further recovery in the offshore trajectory of revenues.
Understood. The second question is regarding this ESOP trust. So what is the mandate and how much more can we loan to them? Is there a limit we have put to the amount of loan that, you know, we will be giving to them?
Yeah, so this is PD. The loan limit as it stands for it currently is 150 crores. The mandate to the trust is basically to acquire shares in a staggered manner from the market so that whenever employees exercise options, those exercises can be settled using shares in the inventory of the trust without the company having to issue new shares. So that's the basic purpose. The trust was set up in 2016. And has been buying stock since then and currently holds just over 800,000 shares cumulatively and will be eligible to fulfill exercise all vests occurring after April 2019. So that's the mandate of the trust. The loan limit is 150 crores. Current holding of the trust is about just over 800,000 shares.
Yeah, but given that this is already like 10% of the net worth, is there a chance that this can increase further to maybe, will you be interested to increase it further or is, because 10% is looks like a substantial number.
So basically, given the rate at which we grant options, at about 800 to 900,000 shares, that is more than enough to meet 3 to 4 rounds of grants. So on a ruling basis, I would not expect that the loan amount goes beyond what we currently mentioned as the limit, 150 crores. Because from here onwards, then I would expect that what happens is employees exercise, the trust fulfills and settles against the exercise, receives the exercise consideration from the employee, and that capital can then be recycled into future purchases. The company's exposure to the trust from whatever little I, you know, we would project, should not need to exceed this 150 crores.
Understood. And finally, on your capital allocation, so given that we have 75% of our network in cash, so is the plan to continue giving back to the shareholders in the form of dividends and buyback as we have seen in the past 1 or 2 years?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Before we take the next question, we would like to remind participants that you may press star and one to ask a question. The next question is from the line of Ruchi Burde from Bank of Baroda Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the opportunity. I have two questions. First, on Rohita's prepared comment regarding the billing rate increase. Could you talk us through where are we in the cycle for pushing billing rate increase? Is it just the start of the conversation, or we already have some committed contracts where this would be implemented? If you were just to quantify a ballpark number as a percentage of portfolio, how much would be that would be appreciated?
Hi, Ruchi. So I think it's all of those. So with some clients, it's just early discussions. With some clients, it has already materialized over last couple of quarters. And with some clients, we may have, managed services contract where such discussion is not warranted because it's based on per transaction or things like that. So I think it's a mix of all three things. In terms of quantum, I think what will get shown in the financials as well as what may pass through to the margin will depend on how many of such conversations actually convert and to what degree, right? So it's very hard for me to put a number, but we are seeing some early signs of both conversion as well as discussions.
That's helpful. Second question that I had was, if I interpret your commentary, you sound very confident about the secular growth and on-site demand. However, regarding your offshore demand, your comments comes with a qualification if that happens. So, is it the offshore revenue growth, the disclaimer that you are conveying, is it more to do with, do you see more leakage from the existing offshore book, or is it because the offshore contract in your pipeline are lower? Some light around this would be helpful.
So, Ruchi, there are two things. One, that offshore revenue has remained flat, or even on YOY basis, it may have actually slightly declined in absolute terms, right? Which clearly indicates that there is a roll-off pressure on the offshore business. And obviously, we are winning new deals, but ultimately, we are remaining or standing still in terms of offshore revenue. As far as future is concerned, I think I already gave an indication, but it's a one-off kind of event as of now that we have won our largest offshore deal. So if that kind of conversion continues in future, then I think there is a good hope of offshore revenues growing in absolute sense from here. But if that event remains like a one-off and the roll-off pressure continues in foreseeable future, then I think that's the qualification I was referring to.
Understood. That's helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Gopinath Reddy, an individual investor. Please go ahead.
Sir, I didn't understand this ESOP concept clearly. In the trust acquiring those shares, will it continue irrespective of the employees redeeming them, or year on year they'll continuously, the trust will continuously acquire the shares, or how will it work? Can you just elaborate on that part?
Yeah, so hi Gopi. So trust was set up in 2016, and 2019 April will be the first period when the vesting under the trust route will happen, which means that last 3 years up till March 2019 were the accumulation period for trust, where when nothing was getting exercised from the pool that they have collected. From April 2019 onwards,
there will be outflow also from that pool, right, as people exercise. And then I think, you know, there will be a net. We have to see how much is getting exercised and how much we have to replenish and how much we have to carry as a continuing pool for forward 3 years. Why 3 years? Because 3 years is the vesting period when we give the ESOPs to a person now. Only after 3 years it's best. So I think after April, the further growth in the kitty net accumulation will depend on how much gets exercised. That will also become an important input.
Okay. Coming to this margin that we are expecting, we consciously took the decision to reduce our margins going forward maybe 3-4 quarters back. And are we able to see at what level we'll be okay with, I mean, at what level of margins that we'll be okay with, and where we'll settle in terms of margins, where this business may settle, at what level? Is there any visibility on that part? Hello?
Yeah, hi, this is PD. So, yes, you know, I think it's hard to predict precisely, but if I draw your attention back to Rohitash's answer to a previous question, at least in terms of factors that we can see on a go-forward basis, currency seems to be more supportive because, you know, our hedges from the second half of this calendar year are at much more attractive rates. And certain one-off costs that we are seeing both this quarter and we'll see next quarter will recede by the time we come to the first quarter of the next financial year, so the April to June quarter. So all else being equal, we should see some improvement in margin from where we stand right now, but it's hard to put a number to that.
Okay. Thank you. That's it from my side.
Thank you. A reminder to the participants, anyone who wishes to ask a question may please press star and one at this time. As there are no further questions, I now hand the conference over to the management for their closing comments.
Thank you everyone for joining for this quarter's call. Look forward to talking to you next time. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of eClerk Services Limited, that concludes this conference call for today. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.